Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Great, everybody, and welcome to the Embodiment Conference. And we are, I feel quite happy to be hosting Sally Kempton. And I'll give a not so brief introduction to Sally, and then we'll pass her the room. So this is basically Sally's, it's a bit of her bio, but one evening in the 1970s, while sitting in her meditation living room, Sally Kempton was overcome by a feeling of all-encompassing, unconditional love that seemed to come out of nowhere. She had never known that love like this was possible. The experience lasted for 24 hours and turned her life around. At the time, she had a flourishing career as a New York journalist, writing on popular culture, arts, and feminist issues for Esquire, the New York Times, New York Magazine, and the Village Voice. An early voice, and in the second wave feminist movement, spirituality was the last thing on her agenda. But her experience that night affected her so profoundly that within a year, she had given up her career to immerse herself fully as a student of and teacher of spiritual awareness. 2 years later, she encountered her guru, the enlightened Siddha master Swami Muktananda, and became his full-time student. An enlightened master in the Indian yogic tradition, Muktananda was known for his ability to ignite the latent meditation energy, kundalini, in others through a look or a touch. When Sally met him, he was traveling in the United States where he awakened thousands of people to their spiritual potential. Sally studied and traveled with Muktananda from 1974 until his passing in 1982. She edited many of his books, received intensive training in the texts of Vedanta, yoga, and the North Indian tantric tradition of Kashmir Shivaism, and taught courses around the world. In 1982, Muktananda initiated her into the traditional Saraswati order of Indian Swamis or monks and gave her the name Swami Drugananda. For the next 20 years, she served as a teacher in the Siddha Yoga meditation community. She created and taught workshops, courses, and trainings in meditation and spiritual wisdom, served for a time as the editor of the spiritual magazine Darshan, and wrote extensively on all aspects of spiritual life. In 2002, Sally was inspired to put aside her monastic identity to create a teaching path that could help students deal directly with the challenges of the 21st century life. Her current work interprets the wisdom of the tantras for mature contemporary aspirants, drawing on depth psychology and neuroscience, as well as insights of integral philosopher Ken Wilber. From her home base in California, Sally travels extensively and offers monthly telecourses as well as workshops and retreats that integrate meditation, yoga philosophy, and spiritual life skills. Though Sally offers many courses for beginning meditation students, she is also regarded as a teacher's teacher. Sally is also the author of hugely popular books, Meditation for the Love of It and Awakening Shakti. She teaches meditation as a process of inner exploration in which we learn to integrate heart, mind, and body in order to experience our natural state of wisdom and love. Sally also offers a wide variety of classes in yogic wisdom texts, as well as hands-on contemplative practices for moving through philosophical, psychological obstructions, understanding the intricacies of inner life, and how to apply spiritual principles to relationships, work, and life in our times. And Sally's going to be offering a session this evening or today on meditation and the sacred body. Sally, welcome to the Embodiment Conference.
Thank you, Miles.
You're right.
So I was hoping that we would actually do this as a dialogue.
That sounds fantastic.
Are you happy to do that?
I'm very happy to do that.
Okay,
it'd be my honor.
That's great. I think under the circumstances, you've had so many presentations of people talking that it's interesting at this point to, you know, have a presentation of conversation. And I know you're very much of a expert on the subtle body. So, you know, we can share our approaches, our wisdom, et cetera.
Oh, I'd love to. That sounds fantastic. It's such a beautiful invitation. Thank you.
Yeah.
When we were talking about your session, in a way, the what was interesting is that you titled it Meditation in the Sacred Body, but we would often slip into meditation in the subtle body.
Yeah.
So, it's obviously the sacred is subtle, but why are these words so interchangeable?
Really, really good question. The subtle body is the technical name for the energetic body that both interpenetrates physical body and also extends way beyond it. And I call that the sacred body, which is part of what the tantricas call it, for several reasons. First, because the subtle body is, let's say, our real body. You know, the physical body is a temporary home, sacred in its own way, no question about it. But the body that comes with us through lifetimes is actually this body made of energy, a prana, with the chakra system in it, with various pranas, channels, and it's really the state of our subtle body, of our sacred body, which determines almost everything significant about our life. And one of the things that I've come to recognize about the subtle body and the physical body and their relationship is that once an issue comes into the physical body, it's very difficult to change. But if you're working in the subtle body, if you're working with, you know, not just the psychological, but especially with energetic issues in the physical body, then you can get to the roots of disease. You can really transform your mind because, of course, the mind is in the subtle body. And it is therefore, we call it sacred because in the tantric tradition, the subtle body is really considered to be the home of, and this is from one of the Shaivite Hatha Yoga texts, the subtle body is the home of deities, of suns, moons, stars. When we enter into the subtle body, we are able to travel to other worlds to experience states of consciousness that can completely transform our experience of the physical world. So a lot of my practice and a lot of my spiritual experience, as it were, has been about learning to live in and expand the subtle body.
Well, it's interesting because you said that a lot of the, let's say we have, maybe I have a physical ailment in my gross body, chronic pain or something like that. And I can do exercise or get massage or take medication for it, whatever. But you're saying that the cause for the maybe you didn't say what the cause, but if we go into the subtle body, we start to understand the root cause of these ailments.
Yeah, and well, more than that, we can actually deal with the root causes of the ailments. You don't always understand the root causes, obviously. Some of them come from, you know, very pure, very physical causes. The point I was making is that for most of us, disease and wellness start on the subtle level, and they have to do, and this is something you know very well, with the way the pranas are moving in the subtle body. So,
or not moving, is the case.
Or not moving, yeah, or blocked or stuck. So subtle body meditation, you know, as well as physical practices like Aikido and Tai Chi, which, you know, actually work. You might say indirectly or directly with moving the energy in the physical body. So to experience really good health, which means experiencing a good mind, you know, which means experiencing a deep understanding of your soul, it actually can't be done in the physical body, except if you're able through the physical body to, to tune into the energy body. So thus we have pranayama, thus we have the martial arts, thus we have hatha yoga, which is actually meant, you know, even though of course it's a great practice for fitness, it's actually meant for activating the subtle body. The claims that these traditions make about their ability to really improve your health and wellness, they really do come from the fact that they connect the physical and the subtle. So that because as long as we're believing that our body is this only, we essentially can't understand how much power we have, how much, you know, genuine subtlety we have, and we can't really transform our consciousness simply through the physical body.
So what are some, I'm just going to ask him for the sake of this discussion, but what are some of the practices? I mean, are we talking like yoga asanas? Are we talking physical fitness? Are we talking meditation to activate the subtle body?
I work primarily with meditation. And I do a certain amount of breath work. I also, and this is a bit subtler, I've also found that certain branches of knowledge, that is, certain ways of understanding reality, actually have a profound impact on your subtle body. You know, we now know how much thought impacts our physicality. It's an enormously interesting new field of study about how our emotional state, you know, can get lodged in the physical body, create disease in the physical body. So, and as I said earlier, by the time you get to the physical body, it's very hard to make a difference. So in terms of practices, there's a whole raft of subtle meditative practices that I work with, that other teachers, especially teachers who work with tantric traditions, work with, a lot of them having to do with the central channel, it's called in Sanskrit the Sushumna Nadi, which runs from the base of the spine up through the crown, and which and there's a lot of lore about the central channel. The deepest truth about it that I've found is from one of the tantric texts, and it says, by expanding the central channel such that you become aware that this thread of consciousness in the center of your subtle body, as you expand it, it basically melts your physical body. Obviously, not in a permanent way, but in the practice that you're doing.
That's the experience.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a very profound experience. Your consciousness expands from the center of your subtle body, which is, which is is right in front of the spinal column. And at that point, you recognize, well, there are many, many things you recognize, but one of the things you start to recognize is that you are basically immortal, that your nature is wisdom and love. You know, that you're much, much bigger than you imagined. And ultimately, that your connections to other beings and to the physical world is, you know, it is identity, you know, that you are not different from, you know, you're, that not just your consciousness is not different from the consciousness of other sentient beings, but your energy field is part of a single energy field, you know, that encompasses everything, certainly on the planet and perhaps elsewhere. So this potential, which, you know, is, I consider the ultimate empowerment, and it's definitely, you know, definitely much of the Hatha Yoga tradition, as you know, Miles, is intended to open the central channel, you know, to give you to give you the ability to tune into it pretty much at will. And of course, in the Hatha Yoga tradition, this is generally done by arousing Kundalini Shakti at the base of the spine. So, you know, when we learn to navigate the subtle body, we are really learning to navigate our deepest potential. So
when you say,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So when you say we learned, I mean, because I we've spoken about that. My background is more in Buddhist Theravada meditation, which is Vipassana, and I totally get what you're saying. But the terminology sometimes is different, but I'd be curious to know, when we learn to navigate, what are some of the methodologies that people take on, practices, to learn to navigate these subtle body energies?
So the Hindu tantric traditions, very similarly to Tibetan tantric Buddhism, there, these two traditions are extremely close.
Right. Yes.
And both of them work very intensely with the subtle body. So the practices would include, obviously, meditation, specifically meditation on the chakras, meditation in the chakras, and a series of practices that I teach, which are taught in both the Hindu tantric tradition and in advanced classes in some of the Tibetan tantric traditions. These are meditations that open up, among other modalities. They teach you how to find the subtle component of the heart, the subtle component of the chakras in the head, the subtle components of the region above the crown, which you know, is actually the entrance point into higher realms. So you can cultivate awareness of the pathways in the subtle body by working with particular chakras. What I like to do, the practice, the subtle body opening practice that I probably teach most often, is a practice where you work with the mantra, you as it were, inject the energy of the mantra, meaning you repeat it with the felt sense of the energy in the mantra, starting with the base chakra, moving up to the heart chakra, then moving into the third eye and above it. And if you have a mantra, and you know, in tantric practice, especially tantric subtle body practice, mantra is key, it's crucial. A mantra has to be empowered, which means you need to receive it from a teacher. And it's really the empowerment in the mantra that begins to open the chakras. And you know, my experience with this practice is that as you cultivate awareness of these three chakras, which, you know, that I would call the main chakras, and you can also do this with the Hara center rather than the chakra at the base of the spine, The point being that all these three aspects of your subtle being begin to come into harmony through your focus, and of course, working with breath, and especially the empowerment of the mantra. And what tends to happen, as you do this practice, as you master this practice, which is not that difficult, this channel is a real, it's a real subtle channel that we all have access to, and that it's mostly a matter of paying attention.
Well, it's our natural state, no?
It's a totally natural state, and it's already present. It's not something imposed. It's not some esoteric, wild and crazy thing. It is, it's basically the central channel is the spinal column of your subtle body. The chakras are the physical and psychological centers which determine your experience of life. And, when we call the subtle body the sacred body, part of what we mean is that it's prior to whatever we experience in the physical body always begins in the subtle body. So the more we purify and the more we open and the more we learn to navigate the chakra system and the central channel, the more empowered we become on really every level, and that includes the physical.
So also by extension, you could probably also say that the way we treat our gross body directly impacts or affects our subtle body.
Yeah.
I mean, it must go both ways.
It for sure goes both ways. And, I think one of the principles of Hatha Yoga and martial arts is that there are certain postures, certain movements, etc., that that impact the subtle body. So you can enter the subtle body through the physical, particularly through the prana, particularly through the breath. That really effective, certainly in the Hatha Yoga tradition, really effective asana practice really does demand that you be very consciously working with the breath, so that that it's not the physical posture alone, it's physical posture plus the prana shakti, the experience of your prana, your subtle energy, that we of course access through the breath.
I love that you in a way interchangeably you use subtle and sacred. And that sacred, subtle body is obviously my interior, my awakening, my interior energy channels, but that's sacred. And usually when I think of sacred, I think of, in a way there's the three faces of God. There's God as it, the almighty God out there. There's God that, let's say, waking up to some type of unity consciousness where it's first person experience. You're not having an experience of God, you're having experience or as God, or as our friend Mark would say, God is having a Miles experience or a Sally experience in the moment. But then there's the second face of God, which is this kind of relational, devotional. And when I hear the word sacred, I hear that there's this thing that we surrender to, we devote to, that is external, but only in the sense that it awakens that very sense inside of us. Is that the same way that you use the word sacred?
Yes and no. I'm certainly a great lover of the second face of God, and I practice and teach a lot of focus on deity. And I would say that the subtle body practices that we're talking about are really first person practices. In other words, they're about teaching, they're about divinizing your subtle body, which theoretically will divinize your physical body. For instance, my guru, who was a really an extraordinary yogi, I would call him a professional yogi in that he did yogic practice of all kinds, including the Indian version of sword fighting, martial arts. He was a great Hatha yogi, and of course a very deep meditator. By the time I knew him, his body had been so cooked in what the tradition calls the fire of yoga or the fire of the shakti that you literally could touch him, and and a transmission of energy would occur.
Really? Wow.
And almost inadvertently, there's a story about how, you know, he was a traditional guru, which means that many of his students were really, you know, had a very worshipful attitude towards him. So people always wanted to have a piece of his clothing, you know, or one of his hats, which he was famous for. The reason being that these articles of clothing contained his energy in very concentrated form. And of course, we know that every one of us has an energetic signature, you know, that when I'm around, you know, my mother, my energetic experience is very different than my energetic experience when I'm around you, you know, or when I'm around this 10-year-old I was talking to earlier this morning, because we all have our own, really our own individual energy body. And what the practices of yoga and the subtle body practices and mantra practice and really cultivating kundalini, what they do is that they enhance your natural energy signature so that it becomes actually capable of transmitting, for want of a better word, it becomes capable of transmitting blessing. It becomes capable of, you know, of actually affecting the outer world just by your presence. And this is not something that only, you know, enlightened beings experience. It really happens to many of us just by, you know, by doing these subtle body practices and, you know, filling the body with deeper and deeper connections to the prana shakti, both inside you and outside.
Well, so that's beautiful, because what I hear is that when we awaken inside this central channel, the subtle body, to whatever degree, that in a way, part of that awakening is that we come into coherence, the mind and the body and the soul, spirit comes into coherence, that they are aligned, that we're not separated. And then that, if we can, let's say, embody that in one way or another, it has an impact in the environment. Is that
That's certainly then, a good way of describing it. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And now I'm curious about is what happens when two come together to tango in the subtle body, because then it's just not my coherence impacting the environment or Sally's coherence having a tremendous impact in the environment. But two people coming into this kind of mutual coherence.
Yeah.
So is that also part of the practices that you're doing and teaching? And
yeah, I found that when you sit with somebody, this doesn't work that well on Zoom, but we could try it. it works better in person.
Sure.
No, I'm not talking about sex.
No. Neither was I.
so when you sit with somebody and it sort of starts with a decision that you both make that you'll connect to each other on the subtle body level. And I
so sometimes the intention is key.
Intention is utterly key. I mean, of course it can happen spontaneously. But it's most reliable if you have created an intention. And part of the way I teach it, and there are many people teach this in different ways, as I'm sure you know, there's a whole new tradition about creating a, you know, what in integral they call a we space between two people. And the way I have heard this taught in that particular circle is that you remove yourself from your body and tune into the kind of general energy behind you. So the way I teach it is that you start by tuning into your inner body, to your heart, and you tune into the other person's heart, and then you find yourself aware of the space between you. And at that point, there is a natural coherence that, you know, assuming that people are not holding back, assuming that people are innocently allowing it to happen, there So, which is one reason why intention is so important, because it's a very intimate practice, even though you're never touching, because it actually asks you to kind of open up your mind field and include another person and allow yourself to be included in theirs. And therefore, when we do a practice like that, it's really important that because, you know, at least as I teach it, it often involves conversation, you know, so do it asking each other questions and answering the questions, but staying very present in this sense of the mutual heart space, the shared heart space, which depends on both people being connected to their own heart and then connected to the other person's heart. So enormous insight and opening can take place. And it's a tremendous, you know, I think one of the things we know is that group practice, especially when everybody is focused in the same way, group practice is exponentially more powerful for most of us than individual practice.
Incredibly powerful, yeah.
So, and you know, one-on-one mutual heart-based practice is also extremely powerful. So the two of you together can open up the shared space, but also open up each individual's inner space in pretty radical and cool ways.
Yeah, and the whole is infinitely greater than the sum of the parts. It's not just me plus Sally. It's that when we meet there, it's really the kind of, in a way, the information of the universe is just passing through.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and there's a kind of a natural intimacy of consciousness. There's a
intimacy of consciousness. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I don't know. I think both of us are, that's what we fall in love with, right? Is that intimacy.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Yeah, consciousness. Sure. Yeah. It's, there's a wonderful statement from one of the great tantric sages, a sage named Abhinavagupta, who lived in the 10th century, and who wrote, you know, he's one of those ancients, one of those medieval masters of whom there are some in every tradition, who just really cut through all the kind of bullshit of religious, you know, current religious experience, cut right to the chase. And one of the things he used to say that has been kind of a lodestone teaching for me is that conscious, you know, that this is a paraphrase, but he says that consciousness contracts to become a human being in the process of manifesting worlds. But that when two or more people, and you'll recognize this from the New Testament, when two or more people are connected, focused in the same way, consciousness expands, and it can expand all the way back.
That's so incredible. Yeah, for me, please repeat. Yeah. Consciousness contracts in order to become a human being. It's like when we're cast out of the Garden of Eden, or we fall back into human being, we fall into ignorance in a way, we become a more or less good or bad, whatever, but we're a contracted manifestation of consciousness as a human being. And then the potential, of course, is to awaken that. And then the second part of that, can you please?
So through our mutual connections, through our connections with other consciousnesses, which I've discovered can be animal consciousnesses as well, you know. There's a film now called My Octopus Teacher, which is
it's on my list. Yes,
really an amazing film, and it's really about interspecies communication, and you know, in many ways. It's about love between a man and an octopus. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's quite an extraordinary film. But
so you hinted to the New Testament. I guess it's the Jesus quote: "When two people come together in my name, I will be there." Yeah. This kind of this arising of the sacred. When two people organize, they come in a mutuality around the sacred.
Exactly.
And then at that point, consciousness expands.
Yes.
Such a lovely. such a lovely map in a way.
Yeah, I think it's a really key, you know, I actually feel it's one of the most potentially transformative understandings you can have, because it will change all your relationships. If you make a decision, you know, especially with your close relationships, that you're going to actually spend time creating that mutuality, then you realize that your friends, your family members, you know, your work colleagues are each one of them is a kind of a conduit into higher states of awareness just by your ability to connect with each other. Mm-hmm. This is a well-known in every spiritual tradition. In both the Jewish and Christian traditions, and certainly in Hinduism, satsang is, you know, is a key. The community is key. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the understanding is that you actually need community, you know, in order to fully realize your connection to God. I guess the thing that I'm trying to say here is that you don't need, you know, you don't need a minion. You don't need an entire church right. full of worshipers. You just need another person who's willing to get onto the sacred wavelength with you.
Or a cat, as you were hinting to. In certain situations, an octopus. That's so beautiful. That's really. I mean, the key here is that we this mutuality that we actually come together, and we're organizing around the sacred, the subtle, mindfulness, the truth, that there has to be some universal principle, or divinity. That we're organizing around, not just a football game or anything like that.
Are you asking or saying?
Asking and saying, but asking.
Yes. Yeah. There has to be a sacred principle, and then here we get into all sorts of interesting situations, because, you know, a platoon of Marines is in communication, if they've been well trained and they're really in tune with each other, you know, and
totally tuned in with each other, right?
Yeah. So they can be, you know, a group of people fighting a battle, you know, or crewing a sailboat can get into that mutuality, you know, over the shared task. Especially if they're tuned with each other, so it's a natural human capacity.
It's like a collective flow, a collective intelligence flows into the field.
Yeah.
Or people attending the embodiment conference also, if we're invited in the right way to enter this field, it will arise in the space.
Absolutely. Yes. So. So what we do in spiritual communion is we take this normal natural tendency for consciousnesses to merge, and we direct them, you know, we direct them towards God or towards higher states or towards interiorization or towards the heart, or in other words, towards one of the doorways, so to speak. I mean, I often consider the idea of God to be kind of a doorway, you know, rather than a concretely subtle entity in particular, but really, a field which is very present, which it is much more available to us if we are deliberately paying attention to it, but which is always available, whether or not we're paying attention, and which we can create together.
That's beautiful. You said that consciousness naturally wants to merge.
Yeah.
So let's say in this vast universe, let's say in the animate universe, because the universe is conscious, I suppose, more or less, but in the animate, there's maybe subtle consciousness, but pretty much rocks aren't conscious. If they are, they're not conscious that they're conscious. But somewhere in the universe, there's a blip of consciousness awakens here, and another one awakens somewhere over there. In time, like two floaty devices in a vast ocean, they will, there's a force that's going to bring them together. They naturally want to merge.
They naturally
what is that? What is that magnetic force? What is that attractive force? What is that?
Well, it's the reality of non-duality. You know, we are in our core part of everything. And even though, you know, in this particular state of our evolution, we're identified with the body, we're identified with their individuality, the notorious ego.
Yeah, right.
When you get to the nitty-gritty of yourself, you know, your consciousness and that consciousness is not different than, you know, than mine or than any of the people who are here. So that consciousness, at least in my experience, wants to recognize itself, wants to reveal itself, and revealing it, recognizing it in another person, I think many of us would agree, is probably the most delicious experience you can have on the earth.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like consciousness in you and consciousness in me is waking up to itself. And we just happen to be along for this glorious, delicious ride, as you say.
Yes, and it helps you recognize something in the other person that you may not recognize if you're just looking at their body. You know, I want to share something, and I think you've heard me say this before, because I think I talked about it at a integral conference where we were both presenting and attending. I used to belong to a spiritual group in which they did a lot of left eye gazing, which is, you know, a popular way of tuning two consciousnesses to each other. Mm-hmm. And the practice was that you would sit with the person, you would look into their left eye. And if you know that practice, you know that there's all sorts of visual distortions and face changes and sort of psychedelic things that happen.
Right.
But at a deeper level, if you're targeted towards it, there is this soul to soul kind of consciousness to consciousness connection. And from that place, you say whatever you might have to say to the other person that might be challenging, that might be confessional. And I have friends who have maintained a couple relationship for 40 or 50 years with great challenge, because whenever they see each other, they spend an hour sitting together, looking into each other's eyes and telling each other what's on their minds, telling each other what their issues are with the other person, confessing their affection or, you know, whatever else. And I found it is the most powerful way to kind of heal a relationship, to have a relationship be really a doorway to the sacred, you know, in circumstances in which ordinarily we might be fighting or just not understanding each other, you know, or in the case of, you know, this particular friend couple that I'm talking about, both of whom are quite polyamorous. So, you know, they bring their romantic adventures together, as it were, through this process. So there's absolute truth between them, but it's truth based on always the connection to the heart and to the consciousness they share. So you can say a lot of things which would be very tough to hear if you were not in this state of mutual openness.
Well, I mean, so let's talk about the heart. Do you bring that into your teaching? I mean, it's easy to meditate and go into all kinds of experiences, but not so much involve the heart.
Right.
I mean, of course, it's a bit of a bypass or massive bypass, but do you consciously bring this into your work?
Yeah. These days, I'm more teaching central channel meditation, but... Mm-hmm. One of my early experiences, and I was trained in a devotional tradition. It's very different than mindfulness practice, obviously. Even though, you know, especially in our time, the traditions no longer seem to be mutually exclusive. So people who practice mindfulness will often discover the heart center, you know, people like
it
me.
It naturally attracts, like you were saying.
Yeah. It naturally attracts, yes, exactly. Yeah. In all the traditions, at least the ones that I'm most familiar with, the devotional traditions I'm most familiar with, which in my case are Hinduism, Christianity, and Sufism, there's enormous emphasis on the heart. You know, in the Upanishads, there's a very famous verse, which someone just sent me a piece of art quoting it. It says, within the heart are the sun, the moon, the stars, all the worlds are within the heart. Within the heart is the inner self whose nature is the absolute. So the practice of meditating on the heart is actually a visual practice that is in many of the Hindu scriptures and very similar to some Christian mystical practice and Sufi practice, where you tune into the center behind the breastbone. This is where I find it, not the physical heart. It's that space that Ramana Maharshi famously pointed to, that's to the right of the physical heart, but in the center. Mm-hmm. And the way I like to teach it is to use the breath. This is actually somewhat, I found out a few years ago, it's very similar to a heart math technique where you imagine yourself breathing through the center of the chest, which believe it or not, turns out to be possible. And even though of course the breath is coming through the nostrils, but you breathe into the center of the chest and then you gradually let the inhalation draw your attention backward to the back of the heart, to the space right in front of the rib cage and back, and then out about the body. You can actually take it out of the body, and it's there's a practice that I know you're very familiar with called Big Mind, which is kind of for those of you who don't know it, it's a practice that was kind of adapted by a Zen teacher named Genpo Roshi from the psychological process called voice dialogue. And in it, you find the energy of your expanded consciousness, which in Zen is called Big Mind. This practice that I'm talking about will open you up to the sense of the great heart, which is, which for some reason, and I mean, this is just something I kind of discovered in meditation about 20 years ago, when you can connect your breath first with the inner heart and then with the region behind the heart, there's a natural sense of expansion of the heart, and it kind of reaches out and embraces you in the room. So I think it's very important when practicing with the heart not to confine the heart to this area in your chest, but to really recognize that the heart is the universe. You know, that the heart is one of the names in Tantra for God, for the supreme consciousness.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
I want to say something else about the heart that if it's okay.
Absolutely. Please.
So mystical Christianity and also very much in Sufism, there's the understanding that the heart really is the seat of God, and that it's, that Cynthia Bourgeau very memorably talks about how the heart is an organ of perception. And this is also a Sufi mystical idea as well, that, we talk about the eye of the heart, that the eye of the heart is literally an awareness that you can find in your body, which the Sufis and the, many mystical Christians actually find inside the physical heart. So in other words, there's a Sufi practice where you find your heart, you feel your heartbeat, which most of us can do, if we pay attention. And then you feel yourself entering into the muscle itself with the sensation that this is the seat in your physical body, you know, of the subtle heart. And so you can do this heart-based practice through the physical heart. And for some people, that's actually the most effective way to do it, because you can feel your physical heart. You can feel your heart. Right. You know, so it's kind of concrete. Right. And again, I mean, there's a lot to be said about the physical heart, and I think many of us know it, you know, including those stories about somebody who has a heart transplant, and then, you know, a young woman who had a heart transplant from an older man who had died in a car accident. And when she got this heart transplant, she began to be interested in beer, which she never had before. She picked up many of this guy's habits. So the heart apparently has a really deep connection to your karma, your soul, your personality. But more than that, it's an organ of wisdom. So, and in the Yoga Sutra, they say that when you meditate on the heart, when you bring, you know, and they're talking about the heart center, then you understand your mind, you can understand your karma. It's a resource within the body that, first of all, of course, connects heaven and earth, connects the upper and lower chakras, but it's also filled with access to wisdom.
Mm. Well, forgive me, Sally, I'm just checking the time here. We have about 6 minutes left. I'm gonna need two to make announcements. And then I'm gonna give it back to you for the final word. But in the last, let's say, 3 minutes or so, is there something else you want to get in before?
I think we could do a practice. So why don't you say what you need to say, and then we can meditate. If that's
perfect.
Okay.
Beautiful. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. So I'll make these short and sweet. So basically, I'm going to put this in the chat. This is about.
Where is that chat? I think.
It's there. Okay, so Sally has you can find more about Sally on her website, sallykimpton.com. She has an online course from Sounds True called Doorways to the Infinite. The link is there. And she actually has several courses on Sounds True that you can find out about. And Sally teaches online courses regularly, including an upcoming course on the Yoga Sutras. I will pass it back to Sally for the last 5 minutes, but just want to tell everybody that we have a Facebook group. If you're not in the Embodiment Conference Facebook group, go to Facebook, join there if you're on Facebook, because there's 38,000 people. Last time I checked, really kind of very lively conversation going on over there. Plus, there are coffee breaks between the sessions. You'll find the link in the portal. And it's a place to go. And, you know, we are drinking at the fire hose here with wisdom in the Embodiment Conference.
Sure are.
And it's a great, we sure are. It's a great place to go and meet with other like-minded people who, it's a place to go and meet in the subtle body and have a cup of coffee. Okay. And finally, the library's for sale. Yeah. I mean, it's not terribly expensive. It was terribly expensive to produce this event. If you want to help support the event, then you can kill two birds with one stone, support the event, and invest in yourself for all this amazing wisdom we have here. Okay, with that, I'm going to pass it back to Sally for our practice. We have about 4 minutes, Sally.
Okay, so I opened up the chat box, and people asked two questions. One is, what are the centers where we take the energy up to the crown, and several people answered the question, the base or the hara. So either the area around the perineum or the area 3 inches below the navel, and the heart center, the third eye. And then your awareness will naturally expand up through the crown. And over time, this practice opens up the central channel. So I think we'll start with the heart this time. And you can close your eyes. find yourself a comfortable grounded posture. Inhale and let the sits bones connect to the earth, and the crown of the head rise towards the ceiling. And begin to follow your breath, having the feeling that the breath comes in. I'm putting my hands over this on the outside of my body at the place where we find the inner heart. So imagine that the breath flows in horizontally into the region behind the breastbone, and just let, and then as you exhale, feel that space expanding. And see if you can, little by little, bring your awareness more and more into the inner body, into the heart space. You can use a mantra, an English mantra, I am, which actually is, in the tantric tradition, it's said to be, as it is in the book of Exodus also, it's said to be God's speech, Shiva's speech. So you inhale with I am and allow the feeling of I am to fill your heart with the sense of your own sacred existence, the extraordinary miracle of your own aliveness. And as you inhale, feeling into the heart space and the awareness I am, which is not only the awareness of your own existence, but the awareness of God's existence, of consciousness itself. See if you can feel your breath bringing your attention out through the back of the heart, to the area behind the heart. And then with the exhalation, feel that the expanded energy of the great heart is also saying I am as the breath, the exhalation moves horizontally. And just allow yourself to really swim in the rhythm of the breath and the heart and the felt sense of I am. So just take a few deep breaths and just notice how your heart and mind feel. We're careening between different meditative experiences during this conference. So add this to your repertoire.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
My heart and mind feels good.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Sally, let me just say to everybody, if you're watching this on Facebook and your heart's been awakened, show some love by showing some hearts. And there's a lot of beautiful messages here in the chat as well. Sally, any final word before we finish off with your session on meditation and the sacred
Well,
body?
a couple of things. I want to say that I'm currently involved in a sort of a project, international project called Circles of Light. And I've created a meditation, an audio and a kind of a script. We're meditating together using this particular meditation every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time, which is whatever that is for you in your part of the world. And this meditation, we're doing it. We started it a couple of weeks ago. We're going to continue it through the American election, probably through the whole month of November.
Wonderful.
And it's basically a meditation in which you tune into the heart and you imagine the world as you would like to see it, so that you're both doing an intentional, imaginative picture of how you would like this world to be. And also, of course, connecting to all the people who are doing this meditation. So that will be available through the Embodiment Conference device, you know, whereby you can download. It's free.
And this is a virtual. Are you meeting online, or is this people are doing?
No, it's absolutely. Yeah, you download it and then you do it on your own. But
at the same time.
Beautiful. And I'm suggesting that people, you know, feel free to create a group of their friends and do it together. So
what's the name of this again?
The name of this is Circles of Light.
Circles of Light. And they can download it on the replay somewhere around on the world.
They can download it on the replay. Or they can download it on my from my website, sallykempton.com. There's a page on my website, which we'll make very obvious. So
wonderful.
Yes.
Do you have a final tip for, we're asking all the presenters to come up with your top tip for embodiment.
A bit
off the cuff, sorry.
Okay, my top tip for embodiment would be focus in your inner body. Focus on the energy in your trunk, in your core, and allow it to expand. And as you do that, you are understanding your sense of connection to your physical body will open up in a way that actually allows you to, forgive me for using this word bypass, it's the only one that comes to me, that allows you to bypass physical discomfort in the physical body and yet feel your muscles and bones and physicality, but from an interior point of view. So you don't have to, you know, go around trying to feel your thighs and feel your feet. You can just feel this inner core of yourself and you'll be embodied.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, thank you so much, Sally Kempton.
Thank you,
and thank you. Thanks to Steve for the tech host and to Brooke for her beautiful poem, Break.
Yes.
And thank you for everybody attending this conference. And that's it. Thank you, Sally.
Love you too. Take care.
Love you. Bye.